This is News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. And this is Atlanta. The food, the wine, the entertainment, the lifestyle. This is Belinda Skelton's Atlanta Living.
Brought to you this hour by Marietta Plastic Surgery.
And welcome to Atlanta Living. I'm your host, Belinda Skelton. Well, in the area, it says a lot to be boasting the oldest family-owned Italian restaurant in the Atlanta area, opening in 1968 and still going strong. And on the show, we tend to bring you a lot of new restaurants, but Nino's was on our radar and we had to highlight it for you. Well, David Danzig ate there and said, Belinda, you have got to try this restaurant. So I did.
Yeah.
And we said, this family is so interesting,
right?
Not just the food,
yeah,
but the family itself is so interesting. We had to bring everybody in and talk to them. So we have Tony, and Tony, I'm not even going to attempt your last name.
Noviello.
Noviello.
Tony Noviello.
Tony.
N-O-V-I-E-L-L-O.
Noviello. Could I pass with that?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
I think you got
and
it.
Your beautiful daughter, Allie.
Yes. And Alessandra is the full name.
But yeah.
Alessandra. And you have dishes named after you.
Yeah. And my sisters. And my mom.
And Helen's in here for support, waving. And so, David, do you want to tell us some of your finer points that you started out with at the restaurant?
Well, I grew up here, and I know I remember restaurants through the decades, right, of being
sure.
in Atlanta. But just to have a restaurant that's been in the same place for 50 years is just staggering. And like you said, Atlanta's all about the new restaurants and the new and the new and the new. And, Nino's is on Cheshire Bridge, and it is the place where if you want to teleport back to old world and the way restaurants used to be, where dishes are consistent, like a metronome, you know, where everything comes out and you go because nothing is gonna, you know, shake your cage. It's just the exact way you recall and you adore these dishes, and the servers are happy to be there. There's no man buns or tattoos.
And they know the dish inside
and out. They know the dish inside out. And, Nino's is just, in my experience, it's just a place like you will feel love, and there's a familial, you know, the family is truly, this is one of those special places where it is passed down. And it's just incredibly special. So I was like, you have to go there. And 50, you know, their 50th birthday, it's beyond special.
Well, I did something that I rarely do, and you urged me to do it, and Allie, their daughter, kind of urged me to do it, and I'm so glad I did. Just kind of let the chef drive the bus.
Yeah.
And let the chef pick out what we eat for the evening. And I'm so glad I did, because I tried things that I normally wouldn't try on the menu, like the octopus salad special. That was delectable, and I would never have tried that. And tell us a little bit about that.
The octopus, it's first of all, comes from Spain, and that's one of the best area from the type of mollusk, I would call.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little difficult to work with. You have to blanch it properly.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to have certain technique to make it come soft.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But once you went through that, it is a delicious dish because it's not, the flavor is mild.
Mm-hmm. It was.
It is a very mild texture. So I love it. Personally love it.
Yeah, he's such an octopus fan, and it is hard to work with. And every time we go out, that's the first thing he looks at on a menu. And so I said, Dad, it's about time. We're bringing this in. So we ordered it, and we're going to make it a staple on our menu. So we're excited.
Do you guys also stay true to old school cooking techniques? Like a lot of chefs now will sous vide an octopus to kind of break it down. And it's not cheating. It's fair, but certainly they didn't have sous vide cooking back in the day.
Yes, I believe in the old-fashioned way. everything we do, still we do it the old-fashioned way of preparation. We do all our own sauces. We bring in fresh veal. We break it down. We use the bones for stock. Mm-hmm. We make our own demi-glace. Everything is, we bring our own whole fish. We cut up every day and butcher. Nothing comes packaged. Everything comes fresh. So the old-fashioned way.
And nothing's wasted, is it?
And we don't waste much at all. No, no, nothing. So we use, you know, if you want to make a little soup with the fish bones, we do. Otherwise, we discard that. But chicken stock, veal stock. So all that is prepared daily, you know.
And it shows. I mean, it definitely shows in the food.
It shows in the flavors. If you notice at times, and when I go to restaurants, next day I don't feel that sharp. And it's because they use a lot of sodium.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of
MSG. We try not.
Preservatives, sort of make the food come out more flavorful. We don't. We try to use the natural way. And so when you eat aninos next day, I feel pretty good.
You feel good during,
and the next day.
But that's what's great. Like, you go into that dining room, and one thing I noticed was not everybody, but most people either had the look about them like they were regulars, or I watched them come in, they hug, you know, you were giving out hugs. Like, it's really, you know, you really thrive on your regulars, right? Because
just yesterday afternoon, the phone rang. I pick up the phone, and this gentleman, I'm not going to name him, but he said, can I come in tonight for four people at 7 o'clock? You know, we said hello. I say, yeah, sure you can. He said, I was there last night. I have to come back tonight, too.
I understand. After the a couple of dishes that I had, that would be absolutely...
They're crave-worthy. You kind of have a... I was eating the other night, I was telling my wife, it's kind of like an epic romance novel as you go through the courses.
Unfolds.
I mean, it unfolds, and you have... there's emotion in the whole experience.
Tony, I have to ask you, so how did you get started in cooking? Because you made your way to Monte Carlo and then to Bermuda, where you met your lovely wife, Helen, so then to Atlanta. So how did the chef part work into this?
Well, I started home with my mother in our kitchen. When I was a young child, I used to get up first thing in the morning in the summertime, and I would go and I grew up by the ocean, so pick up seafood on the rocks of the mm-hmm. ocean. There's a little shell, and bring it back home and let my mother make a sauce with that. And I was pretty good in the water too. I used to go and spare octopus or fish and bring it back home. She would cook it, you know. And I was only about 10, 11 years old.
Oh, wow.
My father got a bar, very little food, but I ran it for a couple of years. So I was in the bar industry already at 12 years old, believe it or not.
Believe it.
Yeah, and long days and 7 days a week. But then we moved to Monte Carlo, and I started working at the Hotel de Paris, SBM, that's a company that mm-hmm. owns by the Prince. And so I was in the front of the house most of the time. And then I went to Bermuda in 72, worked for Castel Arbor for six, seven years, and then worked for the Princess for another couple of years. The Water Lot Inn was the restaurant, high scale restaurant. And then I came to the United States. Meet Helen on the beach one day, and she helped me out. She was my lawyer and helped me out to get a green card, and I officially came with a green card in the United States. I was number one on that special green card that never expired. and eventually got married after I bought the restaurant in 82, got married in the next year, and here we are, 37 years later, 35.
And it's really in the blood, too. And so, Allie, you're obviously Tony's daughter, and you're very integral. I mean, your family is very integral in the whole operation, and that's just amazing to see that it keeps going down to the next generation. So you're going to change everything, right?
No, not at all. Yeah, I mean, I was invested from a young child. I was 6 years old running around wanting to help pour water and wanting to help hang coats. And customers were calling Tony, like, why is your six-year-old working there? And he's like, I promise she wants to be here. And but yeah, the minute I started kind of part-time when I was 14 at the door, I just kind of never left. You know, I grew a big interest for it. We love it. And the true thing to carry this on as he retires is we're going to keep it true. You know, we're going to keep it family oriented. I have the best consultant to call on every day to have it. He's never going to leave the building. You know, as much as he says he's going to retire, he's going to be in there probably a couple hours every day. And, you know, we're excited. We're going to carry it on, and we're just going to kind of fine tune everything we do and keep it, you know, authentic. And that's just our big goal.
That's the best you could possibly do. Can you stick around for a few more minutes?
Yes.
I know you've got a pot of stock boiling in the kitchen ready for the next service, but we'll keep you just for a few more minutes. You're listening to Atlanta Living, where we're speaking with Tony and Allie and from Nino's off Cheshire Bridge Road. And it's a restaurant that if you haven't been there, it definitely needs to make it to your I want to do list, because it will change your view of Italian food for the rest of your life. It has mine. So we're going to take a short break. We'll be back with Nino's and Tony and Allie. You're listening to Atlanta Living, only on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
Now more of Belinda Skelton's Atlanta Living.
And welcome back to Atlanta Living. I'm your host, Belinda Skelton. I'm in the studio with Nino's oldest family-owned Italian restaurant in Atlanta. That would be Tony
Noviello.
In Union, that would be Tony and Allie Noviello. It's been operating since 1968, and they're celebrating their 50th anniversary. And Tony, I wanted to ask you, are there a few dishes on the menu that just are really close to your heart?
Well, as an Italian, I love my pasta.
I love your pasta. Mm-hmm.
Yes. So some of the dishes, like a fettuccine Nino's, fettuccine with smoked salmon, a little bit of tomato and a touch of cream. It's a delicious dish.
Mm-hmm.
It's very simple to make, but through the years, people love it.
Mm-hmm.
Pasta, infused pasta, like a spaghetti peperoncini. Spaghetti peperoncini has a little texture of a little red pepper inside the pasta. And when you taste the pasta, it's got a little tingling in your mouth. Not very spicy, but a little tingle. And we make that with very simple with artichoke, grilled artichoke, fresh shrimp, little garlic and olive oil. Toasted, fresh parsley. And beautiful dish. Simple, light, and delicious.
Now, who is that named after?
This we name it after Eva, my granddaughter.
Okay.
Who she's four.
Yeah, my daughter.
Oh, how adorable.
Alessandra's daughter.
And she's working the tables a little bit too now, right? She's like telling people to come back.
Yeah,
and
she has a little attitude. She's a cutie.
Taking after her mom.
Yeah, yeah. She says, thank you very much. Enjoy your meal.
Okay, do you have another dish you want to share?
Well, I love fresh fish. Like we bring in some nice black grouper daily. We cut it up ourselves, and I love that simple fish that we pan sear it, and top it with a little fresh tomato, capers, black olives, a little white wine, and top it with that. It's delicious. Yes.
It sounds
very fresh, very simple. Fresh, very light sauce, and everything, all the items are fresh. So I love that. Yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing your talents with us for the past 50 years, and we look forward to the next 50.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, David, thank you for introducing
Absolutely.
Us to Nino's and bringing it to the radar.
Get on it.
All right, you've been listening to Atlanta Living only on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
This is News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. And this is Atlanta. The food, the wine, the entertainment, the lifestyle. This is Belinda Skelton's Atlanta Living.
Brought to you this hour by Marietta Plastic Surgery.
And welcome to Atlanta Living. I'm your host, Belinda Skelton. Are you looking for a fabulous wine? Well, let me introduce you to Tom Gore Vineyards. He is from California, and Tom's in the studio, and we're doing a little wine tasting with him. And he's been a grape farmer for how many years, Tom?
Well, I was raised in the vineyard, so most of my life, but professionally over 20.
Over 20 years. So tell me a little bit what it's like to be a grape farmer and have a vineyard.
Well, I've always loved being outside, and my parents moved to the area, or to Sonoma County specifically, in the early 70s, a couple years before I was born. And so I've just grown up in the vineyards. I don't know anything else.
So were your parents in the vineyard and the grape business?
Yeah, my dad was a farmer also, and kind of followed in his footsteps. I always go back and forth between whether or not it's the thing I've always wanted to do or the thing he wanted me to do.
Well, after 20 years, hopefully it's the thing that you now want to do.
Oh, I love it. I don't think I want to do anything else. This is it's such a great combination of like actual farming and being outside and then having an awesome product at the end that you can enjoy.
It's a very volatile business with the grapes. They seem so delicate, and the grape making process, that it seems a more delicate agricultural business than regular, say, if you were a tomato farmer or raising soybeans.
Well, I think we definitely all have our concerns with Mother Nature, and you know, one of the things I like to say is Mother Nature always bats last. So, no matter how good or how hard you work, it can all come down to an act of nature. I definitely think that like the process of it getting to the end is a finite process. So, to your point of taking care of it all the way to the end. And the ironic part of it is that we squish it all up when it's done.
That's true. You kill it.
Yeah, yeah. You get these grapes perfect, tasting beautifully, nurture them along the way, and then we squish them up and ferment them.
Now, but it's become truly a science.
Absolutely.
Of making wine.
Yeah, and my focus is really growing grapes. I work with a fantastic winemaker that has been in my family and I've known since the early and mid 80s, and she's awesome. Her name's Maureen Martin, and my side of it is really growing the grapes. I'm a farmer first, and I'm involved in the winemaking process, but at the end of the day, I farm. And what I really focus on is how do you get the layers of flavor from the field? And so you think about it from a winemaking perspective, and you have barrels, and you have yeast, and you have temperature, fermentation, and all those different things that slightly change the nuances that you get in the wine. And what I try to do is use sunshine and heat and coolness and when we do the handwork passes and when we prune, for example, or when we leaf, the different rootstocks that you would choose to plant and the clones of the different varieties to really do the layering of flavors on the front end so that you get something to the winery that's already got some complexity to it.
So we're drinking a Sauvignon Blanc right now, a Tom Gore Vineyard Sauvignon Blanc that is absolutely scrumptious. So tell us about this grape variety.
Well, Sauvignon Blanc, I think, is, I love it as a white wine. First of all,
it's my go-to.
Yeah, yeah, it's bright, it's vibrant. I feel like it's a wine that you can use with food, but it's also a wine that you can really easily have a glass of when you get home and mm-hmm. or on a hot day, and it really is refreshing. From growing it, it's the one that I harvest first every year. So it's one of my favorites from that perspective because yeah. You know that harvest has started once the Sauvignon Blanc is ready to pick. I really try to use the sunshine in California to my advantage with this wine and really get it to a real bright fruit kind of. And I pull a lot of leaves to get the fruit exposed to the sun, turn it golden. So when we harvest, when I harvest my Sauvignon Blanc, we're going to see a real golden profile in the fruit. It's hopefully going to.
Can a day make a difference?
A day can make some subtle differences, but 3 days can make a big difference. And if it's the wrong day, you know, if it's 105 degrees and it was perfect yesterday, that one day sure can make a difference.
Wow.
But generally, I would say that one day doesn't make a huge difference unless there is some extreme weather or something like that associated with it.
Okay. In your vineyard, are you, the wine that you're producing, do you grow all the grapes that you are producing wine with, or are you importing some of the other varieties?
We grow most of the grapes and all the varieties. The most is the Sauvignon Blanc, but we use a little bit of fruit from one of my really good friends for the Chardonnay that he grows down in the Central Coast. And but primarily, I grow everything.
And so with the subtleties, tell me when people are tasting wine and they say, oh, this has a fruit-forward subtlety of a little oakiness, is that coming from what you're doing, or is that coming from something that they're doing in the fermentation process?
Well, I would say that the oak would come from oak aging in barrels,
right.
So that would be in the winemaking process. But the fruit-forwardness definitely comes from some of the work that we do and that we do in the field to nurture those fruit flavors like we were talking about a bit ago. So with Chardonnay, for example, you know, you can, if you do 100% of what they call malolactic fermentation and 100% oak, you're going to have a really strong wine that's based on some winemaking techniques. Where
I love this Chardonnay because it's not too strong.
Yeah, and so what I really want to do, again, is if we're going to talk about farming and how it shows through in wine, it has to taste like the Chardonnay grape. So, but at the same time, I really want it to stand up to food. And so one of the things that we do is use enough oak that the wine will stand up when it's paired with food. But at the same time, it's got enough fruit and enough flavor from the vineyard that that's also part of what we're showing off.
So how has your farming changed over the last 20 years?
Well, we have, you know, I think that we've definitely reduced the amount of water that we use. I think that both from a qualitative perspective and a sustainability perspective, that those are.
How have you managed that?
I think we've learned a lot about how grapes grow and when they need to be stressed and when they need to have water. You know, plants need water to survive. So we do one way or the other, they get it, whether they search for it with their roots or whether we apply it through some irrigation. But there are some specific times of the year where you'll make better wine if they're stressed a little bit and if they don't have available water. And that's right kind of at the beginning of summer.
So like they so that you want them stressed a little.
Yeah, yeah. But you don't want them stressed at the end of right before harvest. We want them stressed in the middle of the season, right after the fruit sets on the vine, which generally in California is late May through June. You'll start to see these little berries form and they start to size up. And if we can restrict how fast they grow, meaning if the plant is stressed and the berries stay small, the flavors will be a little more concentrated. And that's really one of the goals. Small berries equals high quality.
Okay. So we're talking about water. Do you fertilize? Do you use organic fertilization? What do you use?
So one of the big things that I do for that is I make a lot of compost. We do use fertilizer, but most of what I put back in is I take the all the waste from the winery. So mm-hmm. after we press the white grapes and after we ferment the red grapes, I take all the skins and seeds and stems and put those out in a compost field. We turn them and get them hot and turn it into like what you would buy from a nursery as compost. And we put all that back out into the vineyard.
Now, I've gone to Napa and Sonoma and I've seen rose bushes. Sometimes at the end of rows of grapes. Now, is that for decoration or is that for insect control? What is that for?
I think it's mostly for decoration.
It was pretty.
I think, yeah, they're beautiful. I have a rose garden at my house too, so I love roses. But really what we do with that is, or what, where it started was powdery mildew is probably the largest fungus issue that you can have with grapes, and roses show powdery mildew before grapes do. So some people would see the mildew on the vineyards or on the roses and know that they were doing something, or that that same problem might be coming to the grapevines, and maybe there was some stuff that they could do at this point. I don't really know if there's a lot you can do to stop it if it's coming, but I think it was what they would call an indicator.
Okay. Now, do y'all share information as farmers and grape growers in the area, or is it kind of each man for himself?
I love to share information. I'm an open book with that kind of stuff. I love meeting with my colleagues and or my friends, or however you want to, you know, lots of you call your competitor next door your best friend too, right? So
yeah.
it's a really tight-knit farming community, and I really like to share whatever information I have. I would say most people are more than happy to talk to you about what they're doing, and I think a lot of the ways that our industry has moved forward is by people working together and trying to develop some of those relationships so that all grapes in Sonoma are moving forward, you know? I think about it like as long as I'm in the wine business. Mm-hmm. So if you drink wine, it doesn't matter to me which one it was. Of course, I would prefer that it was mine. But at the same time, as long as people are drinking wine and the wine industry is doing really well, I have a place and something that I can still do and love.
Right.
So it doesn't matter to me if you like sweet wine. It doesn't matter to me if you like the biggest, boldest red wine. As long as my dad used to say all the time that the best wine you'll ever have is one you want to have another glass of.
Oh, what a great saying.
Right? I can hear that in the back of my head as a little kid, you know, and it just, to me, it means don't be too stuffy about it. Enjoy what you enjoy, and whether it's expensive or whether it's cheap or whether this person says this or whether it's just, as long as you like it, just keep enjoying it.
Don't you feel like wine in the last few years has become so attainable is not the word I'm looking for, but so easily drinkable and less snobby?
I think a lot of that is because really good wine is more and more available all the time. And so, like I said, I've always kind of, I personally,
good wine and the price point has really come down.
Yeah. And I really enjoy wine of all types and have always tried to embody, like what my dad told me, where the idea is that you want it to be, if somebody enjoys it, just let them enjoy it. And I think that it's also coming together with friends. I think that's what I've always seen is the connectiveness of wine. I think like beer is camaraderie and you know, wine is a little more connecting around a table and food, I think. And so I think about that, like when I was 7 years old, what was it about wine that, when I didn't even know anything about wine, that drew me towards farming wine grapes and not just farming corn or farming something else?
Right.
And I think it was watching the way that the end product brought people together.
Tom Gore has been in the studio with Tom Gore Vineyards. You're listening to Atlanta Living only on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB. And welcome back, y'all, to Atlanta Living. It is time for Breaking Chews, our weekly check-in on all the up-to-the-minute breaking news about local restaurants, chefs, and festivals. I'm here with our favorite foodie correspondent, David Danzig, of the website BitesandSights.net, also a food writer for Atlanta Social Season magazine, and, of course, BelindaSkelton.com. So, a Savannah phenomenon has come to the big city.
Yeah. So, a buddy of mine was traveling a lot to Savannah for business. And he'd come back to Atlanta and he'd gush about this sandwich place. Oh, this sandwich place. Oh, this sandwich place. So good. It's like, had this weird name. So, you know, it was kind of on my radar. But then last fall, BuzzFeed did a article called 34 Meals That Are Actually Worth Traveling For. And they included this place, Zunzi's, on their worldwide list. I mean, this was, you know, meals to travel to, you know,
yeah,
the other side of the globe, but Zunzi's from Savannah made that list. Well, lo and behold, we got our own location of Zunzi's. It is now set up on Howell Mill Road and Collier, kind of near I-75. Mm-hmm. So I'll get to the food in a second, but let me just tell you a little bit about the mission of the restaurant. So you know how Chick-fil-A, when you get something from one of their associates, they say what?
It's my pleasure.
It's my pleasure, exactly. Well, Zunzi's mission is for you to have go eat their sandwiches and experience the whole thing, and at the end you go, expletive, yeah. And it's S-H asterisk T, yeah. So you go blank, yeah, after visiting. So it's on their uniforms. I mean, it's on the walls. It's their thing. So the food, it's South African inspired. So it's very unusual, but it's not really like palate busting. There's nothing you won't eat and go, wow, this is the weirdest thing I've ever tasted. Their flavors are hearty. They're incredible. The ingredients are amazing. So take the Godfather sandwich, for instance. This is a hot sandwich. They serve it on a massive classic French baguette. They stuff it with all white meat, chicken, and boerewors, which is a South African smoked sausage, provolone cheese. They put their proprietary dressing and then their house-made blank yeah sauce on it. And it is this glorious hot mess of deliciousness that you just have to try. And they do other sandwiches with curry chicken salad, portobello mushroom, salmon. It's such a place. You want to explore everything there. It's very special. Even their soft drinks are from a company called Tractor Soda Company. So they have blood orange soda, cucumber soda, lemongrass soda, all these incredible flavors. And then you got to top it off with a bag of Bird's Famous Cookies. Those are from Savannah's. These are like little RPGs of flavor in your mouth. They're so good. So if you want to try something extraordinary, totally new, Collier, Howell Mill, off of I-75, Zunzi's sandwiches, just next level kind of stuff. And I got a bunch of pictures and links up at BelindaSkelton.com.
Imagine me just stumbling in on this restaurant.
I know, you just found it by accident.
I just found it by accident.
It is a phenomenon.
Where can we find you during the week, baby?
My website is bitesandsights.net. And you can follow me on social media. My handle on all of it is Bites and Sights.
I can't wait to see what you bring to the table next week. You're listening to Atlanta Living, only on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.